Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 35 of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. And I thought I would bring another solo episode to you with some insights, things that I'm seeing. I will be returning with guests next week. Super excited with the people that I've been recording with recently. One of the big things kind of behind the scenes, so you wonder why, or if you're wondering why, sometimes I have solo, sometimes I have guests. Sometimes it's because there's things I just want to share and I want to use this platform and the people who are tuning in to reach out to call center owners and leaders. And sometimes it's because I have guests and I like to record and then have those episodes go live as soon as possible afterwards. Now, sometimes what happens is people record as a guest on a podcast and it could be 3 months, 6 months, depending on the backlog that somebody has recorded as a host. And I try not to do that. I try to have it be as timely and relevant as possible. Not that it's always in the moment, something that needs to be shared right now. It's usually evergreen content from the type of guests that I have and the conversations we have, but it's more fun when we record and then it comes out and, you know, everyone's excited about it and wants to share it. And I think it makes a better experience for you, the listener or the watcher. So that's why we do that. That's how I have it set up. And so this is one of those solo episodes where it's a combination of, I have some recordings of guests that I want to get ready for next week that's not ready yet this week. And I have a topic I want to share because this comes up a lot. So as you probably already saw in the title of this episode, I want to share my top three tips for scalable recruiting for your sales operation. Now, let's dive into a couple of things here. One is, what is scalable? Well, scalable is when, in my opinion, you build a system or have a process where it is set up in a certain way where as you add inputs, it can scale and grow nearly exponentially if you want, and it's not a one-to-one ratio. Meaning, if I want to hire 5 salespeople, it takes 1 recruiting manager, right, and a set process. If I want to now recruit 10 new salespeople, I would have to have 2 recruiting managers. That's not scalable, right? Because that's a fixed number of inputs and outputs and things like that. And so scalable is, okay, so I have 5 people with 1 hiring manager. Now, if I want to hire 20 people, I could still do it with 1 hiring manager because I built a system, a process, and it's scalable. So how do you do that? That's what I'm going to share today. Instead of talking about theoretical, instead of talking about what you could do and what I see in mistakes, I want to give you just 3 tips and however long this episode ends up going for, because these are the kind of things that I help companies with when they're hiring me and we're building their sales recruiting process. These are the things we look at. And of course, if you want my help, you can always email me. The information's in this show. You can always reach out to me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. I'm happy to share these tips or talk to you about how to help you scale your recruiting, your sales operations, your revenue process, anything in that cycle, in that mode. So let's go through the top 3 tips. These are the 3 things that I have found to help build a scalable recruiting system for your sales operation. Now, keep in mind, this could apply to other departments as well, specifically focused for the sales side and specifically for inside sales, but I think it could apply to anything as well. So first item, tip number 1 is know who you want on your team. A lot of companies don't take the time or aren't fully aware of who it is that they want to have as a new hire salesperson. Do we want someone with lots of experience? Do we want someone who has no experience or no background and we're going to train them and mold them and teach them and raise them the way we want to raise them? Or do we want that veteran experienced salesperson who's going to come in, probably not very moldable, is going to want to do everything their own way Is that what we want as well? So you got to look at that experience wise. How much of a job experience and what kind of background? Does it have to be in the same industry? Does it have to be also in sales? Can it be something that's complementary? Many times I have looked for and successfully found people who were great at inside telesales, consultative sales, and they came from a background of retail, restaurants, door-to-door, things where they're interacting with people, maybe not in a sales capacity, but then once you give them the proper tools and they bring their attitude and their kind of their natural abilities and talents and strengths, then it works well. So you really want to know who that is. One of the biggest things, one of the best ways, if you don't know who you want to hire, you don't know what it takes or what the makeup of the kind of person on your team that does really well is to reverse engineer it. It's the best thing you can do. And I help a lot of companies with this, where we look at their current team, past people on the team, top performers, bottom, middle, take all of that, usually run them through a bunch of assessments, analytical tools, and then determine, here's what it looks like. The people at the top come from this kind of background, this kind of experience, have been in the industry like this. They have this kind of personality traits, these kind of behaviors, right? We just run it through all of these various assessments to determine, okay, based on that, here's what you're looking for. And really the output, the end goal that you want, especially if you want to build this as a scalable recruiting process, is you want to be able to take that and then put that into some kind of assessment, test, or filter that can then be run as the most automated way possible, which is, you know, imagine a pre-hire assessment, pre-hire test that you give everyone based on personality, behavior, how they react to scenarios. That's testing for what you know that you want, because you know that that person is more likely to succeed. Now, of course, there's always outliers. There's always people who won't fit the mold, where they do well, but they don't fit in that. And that's fine. And that's okay when you, if you want to make those exceptions. But generally, if you want to build a scalable recruiting operation, and one, again, the point of scalable recruiting is not just to get lots of butts in seats, right, as it goes, but it's to keep lots of butts in seats. It's to scale your recruiting such a way that you're also retaining more and more people so you can grow your sales operation. Doesn't do any good to scale up and hire 20 and fire 18, right? What you want to do is hire 20 and keep 15. If that's possible, keep 12 and then grow that way and make it more scalable. So again, tip number one is know who you want on your team and be able to put that in the form of an assessment, a test, or a filter that anyone can then administer and run such that it is scalable. Again, so you don't need five hiring managers. You can do it with one or with two. So that's number one. Number two is build your recruiting process similar to your sales process. So let me explain what that means. What you're looking for, if you're running a sales operation, is you want salespeople who will run your playbook. Now, there's a lot of companies, a lot of people who are in sales, get into sales, they're leading sales teams, and they don't want structure. They don't like scripts. If you ever want to know how open somebody in sales is to things, just say the word script and it will tell you their thoughts and feelings instantly about if they're open to things like that, which is a system, is a process, is a playbook. Generally, what happens is a company does determine, even if they don't outline it, even if they're not strict about it, they determine, they know what works. It's going to take this many calls for you to close this many deals. And if you don't know those things, if you haven't developed that playbook or you don't have that parameter and you don't know what success looks like and you don't know where to tweak, please reach out to me right away so that we can get something on the calendar and we can talk about it so I can help you build that, because you'll never be able to scale if you don't know what the ideal playbook is, plus or minus. Now, of course, if you're selling something like B2B, so a SaaS platform, you're going to have various sales cycles, right? Some people might close within a couple of weeks. Some might take 18 months. They got budget reviews, depends on who's involved. Some small organizations, bigger ones. Of course, there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all playbook, but you are going to know about how long it's going to take, and you know what success looks like. We know that 84% of our deals should close within the first 2 months. After that, it trails off, and here's what it looks like. We're going to put in the effort on those, but we know that if they don't close, boom. And tip for you as well. If you're looking at these numbers, hopefully anybody watching this is more of a chief revenue officer or a VP of sales and marketing, or looking at the whole picture, which is it's not just about getting new customers into the company's platform, the system, getting them to pay you. It's also about them staying as a customer, them onboarding appropriately, them filling out the documents, even business to consumer. Did they do an onboarding call? Did they send in their verification? Did they make their first payment? Did they do something as a customer? Because a lot of times there's the ideal, which you determine, says if customers enroll in the first 2 months from lead to close, then we know that 95% of the time they will go through their onboarding and they will retain as a client, or they'll do X, Y, Z, or take this action. And so that you just know that fast acting clients with the right salesperson doesn't mean you just want to be an order taker, but you just want to know that. So you've got to know what that process looks like fundamentally. And I can make a whole episode on what that looks like and how to build that. But again, if you want help with that, if you don't have that, if you don't know what your ideal playbook is, please reach out to me for sure. Let's talk so I can help you. With that information, then what you want to do is you want to be able to build your recruiting process, your hiring process like that. One of the biggest things is what you want. And of course, you could have, again, the first step was knowing who you want. You could have all different kinds of personality traits. In fact, there was five that I put into my book, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, which is openness, curiosity, creativity, persistence, and authenticity. Notice that persistence was number four in that list, because I think the other ones lead up to it, because you can have a really persistent person in sales that's not open, and they're going to be driving through a wall and not getting feedback that they could just use the door. So I think an overly persistent, but very closed-minded and not curious person is literally dangerous to your organization. Here's the key though, is the persistence is one attribute of the salesperson we want. We want the other things as well. And so what I have done whenever I've built a recruiting process internally or for my clients is we look at what is your sales process? What are the steps? What are the stages? What are the stumbling blocks? What am I requiring the salesperson to do? Is there follow-ups? Is there a demo? Is there a script they have to memorize? Like even if it's just the monologues, right? Like the elevator pitch and the transitions and objections. What is it that I'm expecting that salesperson to do in the seat, and for how long? How many follow-ups? What does the follow-up look like? Is this an email job? Is this a phone job? Like, if are they doing a combination of things? Are they responsible for texting? Whatever that looks like, you then want to mimic as much of that as possible in your recruiting process. So if you ask your reps to do calls and emails, then you want to do both. You want to call them. You want to have conversations with them, see how they do over the phone. Then you also want emails. You want to send them an email with some kind of question and see what kind of response you get. Do they write like somebody in their emails who you're going to want on representing you to your customers? Or do they write like a teenager who's texting and using short abbreviations for everything and no punctuation, and it's terrible? Because here's the thing, there's some things that you need people to bring with them naturally that you're not going to teach them. That now is not the time to take someone who has really bad communication skills, written email, and then teach them how to email appropriately for your business. That's not a fight you want to get into. I promise. Like that's unless you have the automation or the ways to email for them, if they're going to have to interact, you have to be comfortable and trust that they're going to handle it. So you put in hoops like that. You put in things. If you need them to memorize things, even if it's a paragraph as far as what the company does, and you need them to say that over and over every time, and that's important, whether it's compliance or whether it's just effective. You know that when your company is talked about in a certain way with your elevator pitch, you know that that's very effective because you have crafted that over the years as a company and you know what works. Then you need to make sure that you bring people on board who are willing and open to memorizing something, even if it's during the recruiting process, which is so interesting. Because a lot of times, salespeople don't like scripts and they might not want to memorize something. But I'm telling you, even that one hoop by itself and say, here's this one paragraph. I want you to memorize this. Call me when you're ready, right? Because everyone memorizes things at different speeds. I have tons of stories of people who literally went out to the parking lot, called 15 minutes later and said, I'm ready to go. I memorized this full page. that I'm willing to do for you. Think of it like an audition, right? And they're willing to do that. Cold, no, not looking at it, no piece of paper, just straight up memorized. Other people who took days, other people who literally never called back. That will tell you many things. How persistent are they? How open are they? How willing are they to take something like that and be like, okay, if this is what they want me to do, I want to work here. I'm willing to jump through that hoop and put in that effort. That's great. Because here's the thing, you're going to ask them to do that a lot in their job, in their role, in their career. You're going to ask them to memorize things, change things, do different things. You want to know that they're going to trust you when you give them that. You also want to see how much they're willing to do that, right? Because that's a part of the process. And then other things, if you have a longer sales cycle, how many follow-ups do you do? How long do you put them to wait? And there's something, if you want to know the biggest tip that I have when putting people through these paces, if you want to treat them like you hope they treat your pipeline of leads, email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com, and just put in the email, best recruiting hoop. And I will reply back. I'll let you know what I do in that. Because it's super fun and it works really well. And it will separate the people who you want from the people you absolutely don't want, I promise. So that's the big thing. So tip number two, again, remember, is to build your recruiting process similar to your sales process. Now, if you have a 9-month B2B enterprise level sales process, you don't want to make someone go through 9 months of recruiting hoops. Like, that's a nightmare, but you also don't want to make it too quick. So how do you simulate as much of that as possible? If you have a short one call sales cycle, right? Like most of the deals happen in one call. That recruiting process can be short. Now, you don't want to do it in one meeting where you interview somebody and say, hey, you're hired. Can you start Monday? Because that is weird and desperate, but you want to keep it pretty short because what you're asking them to do is be pretty short with the sales cycle. So that's number two. That tip number three, here we go. So the third tip. So far, well, one and two. So one is know who you want on your team. Second one is build your recruiting process like your sales process. And third, set the right expectations. Nothing will destroy your chances at a scalable recruiting and a scalable sales operation, a scalable call center sales process, more than not setting the right expectation. Because then what you'll have is a constant hole in your boat with all of your people falling out of it and a serious retention problem. Key is to set the right expectation. What happens a lot of times is a couple of things. And this generally, what I see is if you have salespeople in charge of your recruiting process, recruiting interviews, decisions, and so on, and that salesperson, let's say, has moved up to a manager, moved up to a director, moved up to a trainer, and now you have your trainer doing a second interview. Here is the thing, is that if you're not careful, that salesperson will do what they probably did to your potential customers in the sales process, which is standard, but dangerous, which is they will overpromise the things that seem very exciting to get somebody to agree to buy, in this case here, agree to come on board and take the pay and take the risk of coming on as a salesperson. So they'll usually overstate those things and oversell those things. And then they will understate or ignore the things they don't think somebody's going to like, right? So if I say to you, so this job involves making 100 hand dialed cold calls a day, and you'll probably talk to two of them a day, but otherwise you're going to fail at the other 98, and you've got to do that every day from now on. That's not a very good recruiting brochure line that you would want to do. And if a hiring manager knows that's the case and knows that a lot of people just don't like that, or they just get tired of it, they're not going to mention that, or they're going to ignore that. But here's the problem with that, is that if someone gets into that seat, they come on board, and you don't set that expectation in the best way possible, then it's going to feel like a bait and switch, or it's going to feel like they didn't realize what they were getting into, whether it was an intentional bait and switch or it just is what it is. And then they're not going to be happy. And if they're not happy, they're not closing deals. And if they're not closing deals, you're losing money every moment of the day because you're paying that person and for that seat and for that cubicle or for them to be at home and the technology and whatever that looks like, you're literally losing money. It's not that you're not making money, you're losing money. The key is to set the right expectations. You want to do it in the proper way. When it comes to how much money people can make, a lot of times sales-based hiring decision makers or interview managers, We'll talk about how great everyone's doing, or the top person in the office, and how much you can make, or how much they made. And they're amazing. That's why they're now in a manager role, because they were amazing and they've moved their way up, and they, because they were so effective. Here's the thing, is that that sets the wrong expectation, which is, oh yeah, of course, you know, I made 20K my first month. Like, you should be able to do that too. Is that accurate? Is that fair? Where will most people fall? So that's what you have to be careful of, is set the right expectation, because you overpromise it and it doesn't happen. If they get halfway through month one and they're nowhere near that amount, and that's not a requirement for you as a business, then they're going to feel like they were lied to or overpromised something, just like your customers might if they got that same kind of treatment from a salesperson. Now, the key is you've got to know how much you need them to make in month one and month two and month six and month 12. What does that look like for that ramp up, for that speed to competency? How much do you need them to make? What should they be making, and what's fair, such that if they're not even making that, then both sides has a problem, right? Everybody has a problem. And so the key is being able to set the right expectation. One of the biggest things that I've always done is I actually have a printout redacted. So names are crossed out or marked off so that you can't see the names, but literally actual payroll spreadsheet, you know, submitted to payroll of bonuses, commissions, whatever that looks like, so that I can show that. I'll literally do a printout or have it in the PowerPoint if we're doing group interviews, and say, here's what the team is actually making. Here's what they made last month, right? Or however often you want to update that, and say, here's what they made. And it's sorted top to bottom. And then what I always tell people is, it's up to you. It's totally up to you. And you can see, I always include like how long somebody's been, like the number of months somebody's been an employee. So they can see like, okay, this person's been here 3 months and here's how much they're making. Like, here's fair, right? Of course, the person at the top is making a lot of money, but if they've been there 3 years, that's not a fair comparison, right? Because it's going to take time, especially if you have a pipeline you have to build up. So the key is to set that right expectation. Also, if there are parts of the job to the sales role that you're asking them to do that they need to be aware of, so that they have the right expectation in their mind of how it's going to be, it's better to mention it upfront and have people be aware of it and then agree, either verbally or just mentally agree. They understand, like, to get this is also going to require this. And that's so important. Do not hide those things. If you require people to work from 9 to 6 to clock in on time, no overtime, they've got to take their breaks, they've got to take their lunch, but otherwise they're sitting in that desk and they're making phone calls, or they're working from home and they need to log in and they need to have this much talk time or this many phone calls or this many follow-ups, or they better close this many deals or else, like, whatever that is, you need to make sure you set that right expectation with them during the interview recruiting process, so they can make the decision. Am I willing to do that? Because if you don't set these expectations, which is what I see a lot of times with organizations that I work with, is they're not clear on the expectations. Sometimes they're avoiding it because they don't want to scare people off. Other times they just don't even realize what's important or could be important to somebody because they're too close, right? They're too close to the trees. They're not seeing the whole forest, which is where I come in and I can see the whole forest. And then we figure out what's the best thing to put in place. But a lot of times I see people who get hired, they get in the seat, they're in the seat for a couple of weeks, for a month, and they're going, I didn't realize this. And then there's that disconnect. And then the disappointment kicks in because they had an expectation in their mind that wasn't set by you. And then they had an experience, which is not the same, and it wasn't as good. Now they're disappointed. If they're disappointed, they're not going to give it their all. They're not going to be happy. They're not going to close deals. And my guess is they also won't show up for work. So if you have an absentee issue, most likely it's because expectations haven't been set, plus of many other factors, but that's going to lead to your retention issues. So that's it for the top three tips. Hopefully this was valuable for you. Again, recap. Remember, number one, know who you want on the team. Number two, build your recruiting process similar to your sales process. And number three, set the right expectations, both in the positive side for the things that they could have, but make it relative and set it proper to what's realistic for what you want, right? Not just realistic and say, okay, everyone does this, or, you know, it, you know, average is this, but no, what do you want them to achieve and when? and set that expectation so they have something to shoot for. And then also make sure to be fair and explain everything that might happen in the job or what's required to be successful or what it's going to take so that they know and they can decide. Because once you do these things, when you build your process like this and you have this in place, you will shift to a scalable recruiting model and a scalable recruiting operation. And there's a bunch more things. There's more than I could include in this. If you want any help with that, as always, make sure to email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Let's set up a time to talk about your sales operations, your call center, what you can do on the recruiting side, and then everywhere else, especially as we go through the gap analysis and the scalable sales success iceberg model that I have to help you succeed at closing more deals, help your reps make more money, and that way you guys can help more customers. So thanks for tuning in, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at cutterconsultinggroup.com.